It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, romance. Later on, we hear the story, The Golden Face, on the show Romance. But right now, it's Ginger Rogers as star on the Silver Theater from November 27, 1938 on CBS, the same year she was starring alongside James Stewart on the silver screen in Vivacious Lady. She appears in the play The Captain Had a Daughter.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater, starring Ginger Rogers in The Captain Had a Daughter, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you on behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware, International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel. We welcome you to the ninth of the new series of Silver Theater dramatic productions. Next week, you'll hear Clark Gable. And in the following 2 weeks, Betty Davis in radio dramas written especially for them and for the Silver Theater. Today, we're proud to welcome the brilliant and lovely star, Ginger Rogers, playing in The Captain Had a Daughter, an original drama by Grover Jones and True Boardman. The lights are dimmed and the silver curtain is rising on the first act of The Captain Had a Daughter, starring Ginger Rogers as Charity Mason, with Jack Arnold as Peter Storm and William Farnham as Captain Silas Mason. The time, 100 years ago. For weeks, the good ship Challenger, heeling along under full canvas, has beat her way southward along the coast of Africa. And now, as she rounds Cape Tala and heads into the native harbor of Kumbali, there's a startling sight off forward. Another ship at anchor, a fire, and on the quarterdeck of the Challenger.
What is she, mister? Can you make her out?
No, I can't, Miss Charity. She's burning bad. We better be keeping off from her.
Right you are. Helmsman, hard starboard.
Aye, ma'am. Hard to starboard.
Have the bosun pipe aloft the crew, mister.
Aye, ma'am.
Small boat off to port from the burning ship.
He's right, ma'am.
I'll tell the captain the news.
Oh, you will you? What happened?
Oh, captain, we've rounded Cape Tala, sir. Kumbali's off the port bow. And there's another ship there in the harbor, a fire.
Ship fire? Oh, yeah.
I had the helmsman put about, sir. And the crew's aloft. What other further orders, sir?
Well, whatever orders, sir, I'll give myself. I'm still captain of this ship, young woman, even if you would like to take over the job. What is the ship that's a-burning? Have you made her out yet, mister?
No, sir. But she sighted us. Our small boat's already making for the Challenger.
Yeah, so it is. Charity, get to your cabin and stay there.
To my cabin? But, captain...
Yeah, you heard me. This isn't Boston Harbor, Charity. This is Kumbali, a filthy, plague-infested slave port. Till I know more about who's a-coming aboard, I'll not have my daughter a-meeting them. Now, you'll go to your cabin. That's an order.
Aye, aye, sir.
The small boat's coming alongside, sir. Shall I lower the rope ladder?
Yes, but to keep the men at gun positions covering the boat. We'll take no chances.
Aye, Captain.
Ahoy, Challenger! On board!
Ahoy! Who are you?
First mate and acting captain of the Vanguard.
Well, come aboard, mister. Rest arms, men, but stand ready.
Aye, aye, sir.
Yeah, a solid deck again, that's... Well, quite a reception, Captain Mason.
Captain... Hey, how do you know who I am?
Is there a seaman in the African trade that hasn't heard of Captain Mason and the Challenger? The finest clipper that ever shipped the mainsail. And I can see she's worthy of her fame, sir.
Well, there are worse ships afloat, mister. Now, who might you be?
Peter Storm, sir. I believe you know my uncle, Jonathan. He's secretary of...
Jonathan Storm? Well, sink me for a codfish, lad. Of course I know him. Why, we two were the first members of the Abolitionist Society in Boston 30 years ago. At ease, men. Dear post. Well, lad, you are welcome. It's not often that I run into a seaman that looks at slavery as I do. Anyway, not on the African coast.
You're right, sir.
How about your ship there? Will our help save her?
Not a chance, Captain. I kept my men fighting as long as I dared, but any moment now, it'll get to the powder kegs, and that'll finish her.
Captain, here it is, sir. Your glass. I thought you'd need it, sir. Oh, I didn't know.
Charity, is this obeying orders?
Yes, sir. I'm going right back to the cabin, sir. It's just that I thought, sir.
Never mind. Charity, you've heard me speak of Jonathan Storm, secretary of the society?
Yes.
Well, the lad here is his nephew. Mr. Peter Storm, my daughter, Charity.
Charity? Where are your sisters?
Oh, I know. Faith and Hope. I've been asked that before.
I thought at first you were a Quaker maid. Indeed, thee should be a Quaker with such a name.
Indeed, sir.
Yeah, the lad tells me he's acting captain of the burning ship over yonder, Charity.
Acting captain?
We lost the skipper off Cape Verde Islands, and since then...
Oh, Mr. Storm, look! Your ship!
And down she goes.
Oh, in a blaze of glory.
My first command. Goodbye, Vanguard. Give my regards to Davy Jones.
I'm sorry. Truly I am. Oh, I know what it must mean to lose your ship.
I wonder if you really do. Well, Captain, I'd better be getting back to my men. And as long as I can't invite you aboard, I'd like to have you both as my guests on shore. I can probably arrange a sort of native feast that might interest Miss Charity.
Well, I don't know about Charity.
Oh, of course we'll come, Mr. Storm.
You see how much chance I have. What am I to say about it?
Good. And at the same time, we might discuss a little business.
Business, lad?
An empty ship and no cargo. A cargo and no ship. It adds up, Captain Mason. And I hope to our mutual advantage. Majola, the dancers can go, but let the musicians stay. And there, Miss Charity, you had a perfect example of the minuet, African style.
I can just see them doing that minuet at the Palace of Versailles. France would never be the same.
More food, Miss Charity? Captain?
More? I've eaten so damn much of these strange concoctions already that I doubt if I'll ever make the ship.
Miss Charity?
Oh, full to the scuppers.
Good. Then suppose we get to business, sir.
Oh, all right, lad.
First of all, sir, I understand from LaRue, the trader, that you've called here for a shipment of palm oil and ivory. But now he has none available to sell you.
That's right, lad. He tells me he's already sold all that he had to you.
I'm sorry about that, but as a matter of fact, Captain, this whole situation may work out perfectly for all of us. Suppose you look at this, sir. Why shouldn't we operate as partners for this one voyage of the Challenger?
Well, I'd thought of that. Why this paper?
Well, sir, before I went to sea, I studied law for a while, and ever since then, I've liked to have things in black and white.
Be it hereby agreed that the hereto undersigned parties... Pretty highfalutin language, young fellow. What's it say?
The gist of it is that you contract to take over the entire cargo originally consigned to the Vanguard, and my crew is signed on as passengers. Profits to be divided.
Well, that sounds fair enough.
Of course it is.
If you care to settle it now, I could have my men start loading cargo at once. That way you could up anchor at dawn.
Oh, Captain, straight to Boston with a full cargo. Think what it means.
You're right. Where's the quill?
Here's one, sir. And now, Miss Charity, perhaps you'd better witness this.
You certainly have a very legal mind, Mr. Storm.
Very. And sometimes I find it a great asset. Majola.
Morning, Storm.
Majola, take this paper to my second officer, Mr. Marcus. Tell him to have the men start loading our cargo on board the Challenger at once. In case of any misunderstanding, he'll show this agreement to Mr. Thorgenson, the first officer on board.
As you command, Bwana.
Well, we'll be getting back to the ship.
But you can't go back so early, sir. I understood Miss Charity wanted to see something of Kumbali. It happens there's a good moon tonight, and I thought the three of us could take a walk.
Oh, she can wait till next trip.
Oh, but there may be no next trip, please, Captain.
Well, all right, if it really matters to you. But I'm done in. You go along with the lad, and I'll stay here and rest my pins till you come back.
What do you say, Miss Charity? You're not afraid to meet the woman of mystery?
The woman of mystery?
Africa. You'll find that's what she is. A sinister but fascinating woman.
Oh.
With 1,000 secrets of her own you can never hope to understand.
You missed your calling when you went to see Peter Storm. You should have been a poet. Come on. I'll show you how afraid I am. Alive with people. Surely it's not always like this at night.
Only when a ship is in the harbor. Brings all the natives for miles around.
All right, come on, get up there, you.
Mr. Storm.
Now,
over there, what's that?
A fine woman slave.
It's best if we avoid that, Miss Charity.
But it's a slave trader. That's what I want to see.
But you're not going to. It's not the place for you. Come on, we'll go this way.
$70 without the child.
going now?
You've seen one side of Coombully, the darkest side. Now I want to show you another. You're still not afraid, are you?
Afraid?
Of the jungle at night.
It doesn't seem like night somehow. Not with that moon.
We go this way. Through here. Now, what do you say to this?
Well, what should I say? It's just an arbor in the
moon.
Look
at the walls. Look up above you.
Flowers.
Orchids. Probably every kind to be found in Africa. Happens to be a hobby of one of the traders here.
Yes. Orchids. And they're beautiful. Oh, why, they're so beautiful, they don't belong here. Nothing really beautiful belongs so near that suffering and brutality like we saw down there. My father told me once I'd hate Africa if I ever came to know it. I think he's right. I'm glad we're leaving here at dawn. Why are you so quiet?
Charity.
Yes?
Look at me.
I suppose I can blame that on the moon and the orchids.
Charity.
But it better not happen again.
Charity, this isn't real, do you know it? None of it's real, especially you. A man doesn't step onto a ship at the end of the world and find a girl like you. It's all a dream, a crazy, impossible dream.
We'd better get back to my father and to the ship.
All right. All right. But before we go, Charity, I promise you'll remember something.
What?
Just that a man sometimes does things because there's nothing else he can do. And there may be moments when he doesn't like himself or us any better than someone else does.
You have a way of saying things and doing things that somehow don't make sense, haven't you, Peter Storm?
What's the matter with you, Thorgrimson? Are you mad? Get those slaves off the ship. Get them off.
Father, wait. It's just a mistake.
Fake. I go ashore for 4 hours.
I wouldn't blame it myself, Captain, but I had to follow
your orders. Those slaves of the Challenger?
The man's quite right, Captain Mason.
Right? What are you talking about?
Merely that it's my men who are loading the slaves. Hello. Marcus! Hold off there until we settle this thing.
Aye, sir.
You see, Captain, they're merely carrying out the agreement you signed with me 3 hours ago.
You!
What?
Thorgrimson! Pipe all hands here. Make a slaver out of my ship, will you?
I wouldn't call your men if I were you, Captain. It happens mine outnumber them, and they're better armed.
Wait. Mr. Thorgrimson, you read that agreement. Is he telling the truth?
Yes, ma'am. Else I never would have let him come aboard.
All right, Mr. Peter Storm. Go on. Go on and load your cargo. My father can't stop you. He's helpless against anyone like you. Because my father's a man, while you're a sneaking, lying, barge-scuttling rat. There's just one place in a ship where you belong, and that's strung from the yardarm. And if I have my way, I'll see you there.
A pretty speech for a Quaker maid.
A Quaker, huh? Oh,
very pretty. I suppose that means you've finished?
Oh, no, I haven't. Go ahead, Peter Storm. Load your slaves. Load them all. But remember this. You'll never sell a man, a woman, or child that's carried on this ship. I'll see to that. The Challenger has never been a slaver, and she's not starting now.
In just a few seconds, we shall continue with Act Two of The Captain Had a Daughter, starring Ginger Rogers. But first, here is a man with a few words about lasting possessions. John Conte.
Ladies and gentlemen, many of the possessions you prize most highly, and your most expensive furniture, your most beautiful rugs and linens, are perishable possessions. But your silverware, if it's sterling silver, endures from generation to generation. And yet, even knowing that, some of you feel that you can't afford sterling silver. Well, I'd like to show you that you can. For example, right now, in time for Christmas giving, International Sterling has created a special set called, charmingly, a Me to You set, which costs but $16.75. This is a place setting for one person. Six distinctive pieces of solid silver in the thrillingly lovely Enchantress pattern. And this is only one of the many beautiful international sterling sets, remember. There's a larger service of 30 pieces in the same exquisite pattern, which costs less than $100. And there are other patterns besides Enchantress, and larger sets in gorgeous holiday chests, which you can own much more easily than you imagine. Visit your silverware dealer as soon as you can and learn about International Sterling's convenient budget payment plan. For this is the Christmas to give or be given solid silver of imperishable beauty, International Sterling Silver.
The lights are being dimmed once more and the silver curtain is rising on the second act of The Captain Had a Daughter. 3 weeks have passed. The Challenger, her hold jammed with storms, human cargo is far at sea. But it's a strange, unreal voyage, with warfare open but unspoken between Charity Mason, played by Ginger Rogers, and Peter Storm, played by Jack Arnold. And early one evening on the quarterdeck.
Evening, Miss Charity. How's the skipper?
Not too well, Mr. Thorgerson. What's the course?
West, nor-west, miss. We're making good time with this wind. Might even make Havana in 10 days the way we're going.
Oh, I wish we'd never get there.
There go them slaves again. I'll bet they'd keep on singing that song if they was dying.
I know. But I've almost come to love that music. Thorgerson, how is it down there where they are?
I wouldn't know, ma'am. Every day I hear more lashing of the whips going on. I guess Storm's men are keeping order. I have my own ideas about how they're doing it.
So have I.
Suppose you can take the watch a bit, ma'am. I thought I'd check our course on the charts.
I'll take it, mister.
I won't be long, miss.
Good evening. Would thee speak to a lonely sailing man, good Quaker maid?
Passengers are not permitted on the quarterdeck.
Well, this one is. Look, Charity, maybe I'm going soft, but I'd like you to understand.
I do understand perfectly.
But you don't. You only look at all this from one point of view. I'm a slaver, yes. But slavery is a recognized business. If ever there's a law against it, I'll quit it.
There is a law, Mr. Storm. But it's the kind you wouldn't possibly understand.
But there's something else you don't consider. Your father will profit from this voyage. His share will be 10 times what he could have made from an ordinary cargo.
And that's all that matters. You can't conceive of anything being more important to a man than the profit that he makes.
Yes, Charity, I can. From the moment I met you, I've realized there is something more important. It's that I want to talk to you about.
What is that?
I don't know. I'd better go below and see.
Mr. Storm! Mr. Storm, sir!
Here, Marcus. What is it? What's wrong below?
It's bad, Storm. Majola here says the natives have been threatening to rebel, and I guess this is it.
What about that, Majola?
It's true, Bwana Storm. Stay stern as wise men.
They've gotten clubs for themselves by tearing planking and beams right out of the ship.
But that pounding...
They're trying to break down the barrier that holds them off from the rest of the ship. Once they do, there's no stopping.
But what caused this? Majola, why are they turned this way all of a sudden?
Not all of a sudden, Bwana. Some are slaves seek. For 3 days, ask your guards to give help.
Is that true? Did your men refuse to help slaves who were sick?
Naturally, slaves always pretend to be sick.
You, interpreter, take me where those natives are.
Charity, wait a minute. You don't know what you're doing.
You'd better stay here, Mr. Storm. You might be in danger if you come with me.
Going in that hole, Charity, I forbid it.
You forbid it?
Listen to me. This pretending to be sick is an old trick with slave cargoes. They do it to get white men among them, then they kill them. You can't go in there.
Oh, can't I? Thorgerson, Thomas, hold him.
Let go of me.
Now, Majola, I want to help those natives in there, but I can't do it without you. Will you go in with me?
Charity, let me go, you fools. Tell her no, Majola.
Well, Majola.
Great danger. These people like crazy. If Memsahib not fear, Majola not fear. We'll go.
Good. All right, you. Open the barrier, then stand back.
Don't do it, Charity. Don't.
I said open the barrier.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, Majola, tell them the white woman is their friend.
Esma, Esma, Mazunga Mazuri Sara Kiki. Mazunga Mazuri Sara Kiki.
Tell them that she comes to bring healing to their sick.
Ilina Nanyolo, Uganga Yapi.
Charity.
Come, Majola.
In the name of heaven, come back here.
Ask them where the sick ones are.
Masikini, Watu Nawapi.
Hapa, hapa, karibu.
He say this way, Mem Sahib. Here, this man.
Oh, yes. Tell him I promise him that he'll walk again.
Mazunga in Jakey, Nawewe, in Vega Baribari.
Missouri, Missouri, men sub Missouri. Missouri,
men. And now the others.
And now, where are they?
Two women here.
Oh, oh, you poor souls. It's all right. You needn't be afraid. I'm not going to hurt you. I've come to help you. Oh, they are sick. Fever. They'll have to be taken forward where I can take care of them. Now, Majola, there is something you must tell them all.
Majola, wait.
Tell them that if they'll give up their weapons and have faith in me, I'll promise them their liberty, all of them.
Memsa biulu, kumu watu nashambe sakidu indagi.
And now, sing some sort of chant or song that they know so that that will quiet them. Start it, Majola.
You're all right.
Mr. Thorgerson, there's a man in there with a broken leg. See that it's tended to. And the women with the fever are to be carried forward where I can take care of them.
Yes, miss.
Charity, Charity, you're crazy, crazy and wonderful to have gone in there.
Your slaves will be all right now, Mr. Storm. And I dare you to use a whip on them again.
Charity, Charity, listen to me. I want you to know that... Charity!
Good idea, yes, girl, but it's dangerous. No seaman in his right mind would think of it. Would he, Thorgerson?
But it's worth a chance, Captain, to keep the Challenger from being known as a slaver. I tell you, I've studied the charts for 2 days, and if they're accurate, the plan can't fail. But we've got to do it tonight.
Well, all right. It's a long chance, but I'll take it.
Good.
Thorgerson, you change course 5 points till Southwark. Give the crew orders to stand by through the night. 2 points to west it, mister.
Aye, sir.
How much longer, Captain?
Well, it should be any minute, if the charts are right.
There they are up on the quarterdeck. Come on, all of you.
I'll handle this, men. Stay back there. Captain Mason, this land off forward.
I don't have to have you tell me that.
But Havana's still 4 days away.
Who said it wasn't, mister?
Captain Mason, you changed the course during the night.
My father can run his own ship where he pleases.
Oh, no, he can't.
Quiet, Marcus.
Maybe we got something to say about where they're going. We got something.
Watch out, Charity.
Captain, we did it!
What is this?
We've run aground!
You're right, Mr. Peterstorm. We've run aground. Run aground in shallows where the water's only 15 feet deep and the Challenger draws 18.
Then why are we standing here? Let's hit work to get the ship afloat again. Your crew and mine, Captain Mason.
We're no good.
The tide is full and already falling, and there's just one way to get the Challenger afloat.
What's that?
To unload ballast, mister.
Ballast?
I'm talking about property, Peterstorm. A cargo that's nothing to you but so many pounds of weight. But weight enough to release this ship from the shallows if she were free of it.
The slaves.
Exactly, the slaves. And look forward. Land, mister. And do you know what land it is? Haiti, a black man's land. And freedom for every man, woman, and child in that hold.
My compliments. A most ingenious plan. What are you waiting for?
The agreement. My father is still responsible for the delivery of those slaves.
Oh, of course. You would want that. Here you are. And again, my compliments.
Thank you. And now, Mr. Thorgerson.
Yes, ma'am?
Release the slaves. Let the men swim ashore. Women and children you'll take in boats.
Aye, aye, ma'am.
Oh, no, you don't. We all own a share of them slaves, and you ain't throwing her in the boat aboard. Ain't that right, miss?
Shut up, Marcus. I'm running this.
Oh, no, you ain't, Storm. We're running ourselves. All right, Captain Mason. Get down from that quarterdeck. Come on, boys.
You just try to get us down from here.
Marcus, put away that gun. This is mutiny.
All right, then it's mutiny. It's time we was taking things over here. And just because you've gone soft on the girl, Storm, don't think you're going to stop us.
Oh, no.
Peter, look out.
Thorgerson, Captain Mason, call your men. Charity, get to your cabin. Hurry.
Peter, are you sure you're all right?
Yeah, I'll be all right. But it's not quite clear to me what happened. It was careless of me to let myself get shot.
Marcus did that.
Marcus?
Yes, just before I hit him with a marlin spike.
Oh,
don't. You must lie still.
And the slaves?
Oh, we put them ashore at Haiti, and your crew with them.
My crew?
My father let them go. Well, it was that or taking them to Boston to be tried for mutiny.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll miss them at the trial, and on the yardarm. It'll be less interesting to hang alone.
Suppose I told you that you'd had your trial and been acquitted.
But what?
Well, Peter, tell me, why did you turn on Marcus and your men? That wasn't the action of a slaver.
I was through with slavery the moment you walked alone into that mob of savages.
Peter.
You're right, Charity. There is a law against it. A law that I needed you to make me understand.
Peter, darling.
Charity Mason, Peter Storm is a man without a ship, without a cargo, without anything except the very worst of reputations. But he loves you. Charity. To kiss a defenseless man, thee indeed is a brazen wench.
And not an orchid in 1,000 miles.
Oh, Charity, be crazy. Just once again, say that you'll marry me. Will you, Charity?
Mm-hmm. Who knows, Mr. Peter Storm? If thee has faith and hope, well, I have a great fondness for my sisters.
Now to Conrad Nagel, who is bringing to the center of the silver stage Ginger Rogers, star of our play tonight and co-star with Fred Astaire of the forthcoming RKO production, The Castle.
Well, Ginger, this is quite an occasion for us tonight.
Thank you, Conrad. It is quite an occasion for me, too. I've looked forward to my first appearance on the Silver Theater for a long time, but I hadn't known it'd be as exciting as all this. You're such nice people to give me a hero like Jack Arnold and a father like William Farnham and a different type of play like The Captain Had a Daughter.
Well, our sponsor should hear that, Miss Rogers.
All right. You might tell them that I have a very sisterly feeling toward their 1847 Rogers brothers' first love.
You're both carrying on a great name, Ginger.
Oh, but it isn't only that our names are alike, Conrad.
No?
No. 1847 Rogers Brothers' first love and I have had dinner together almost every evening since last Christmas, you see.
I see, and I think it's wonderful.
Good night, Conrad, and good night, everyone.
Good night, Ginger Rogers. We'll expect you back on the Silver Theater soon.
Next week at the same time, the Silver Theater will star Clark Gable in an original story, Danger Lights, directed by Conrad Nagel, with original music scored and conducted by Felix Mills. And in the meantime, if you want solid silver, you want international sterling. If you want silver plate, you want 1847 Rogers Brothers, both proudly created by International Silver Company. John Conte speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 27, 1938 on CBS, the story The Captain Had a Daughter, penned by Grover Jones, who was not only a writer for radio but also a screenwriter. And the first time those two mediums met for Jones was on the Lux Radio Theater in 1937 that broadcast his screenplay The Plainsman with Gene Arthur, Joan Fontaine, and Frederick March. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the series romance. We hear the story The Golden Face, produced by CBS on November 12, 1955.
Now, from Hollywood, romance. Romance. Transcribed stories of love and adventure, of excitement and derring-do, of conflict and human emotion. This week, a story of Hawaii, as Stacey Harris and Lillian Baieff star in William Frug's unusual romance, The Golden Face.
This is the story of a boy and a girl, of how they met, and of what happened to each of them because of their meeting. It's a simple story without violence or melodrama, yet its meaning is clear. It began in that most exotic of locales, the Hawaiian Islands, more specifically, the city of Honolulu, on the island of Oahu.
Boy, take Mr. and Mrs. Snodgrass to room 211. Yes, sir?
Do you have a single room?
I believe we're filled up. How long would you need it?
All the weekend. Tonight, Saturday and Sunday.
I see. Well, let me check.
Thanks.
Have you tried the Halekulani? Or perhaps the Royal Hawaiian?
No, I haven't.
Let me see.
Just
now.
Anything at all, huh?
Mm-hmm. Ah, you are in luck, Lieutenant. Single checked out less than an hour ago. That's 312. That'll be $10 a day.
All right, that'll be fine.
This is our biggest season, you know. Waikiki men have just phoned, said they were sending the people down to Honolulu. Not much of a vacation staying there, I don't imagine. Well, here you are, if you'll sign right here.
Right.
Now, your address, Lieutenant?
USS Claremont.
Good. Boy, show the Lieutenant to room 312.
Not unlike the old days, this new Hawaii. During the war, there had been hotel lobbies jammed with uniforms. Now the same lobbies, newly redecorated, were crowded with straw-hatted tourists wearing brightly colored leis and even gaudier sport shirts. But it was the same Luana Hotel on Waikiki Beach, and the young lieutenant felt good to be a part of the holiday excitement. In his room, he unpacked his canvas bag and looked out onto the huge banyan tree in the courtyard.
Yes?
Bob?
This is Lieutenant Tyndall.
Bob, it doesn't sound like you. Do you have a cold?
As a matter of fact, I don't. I feel wonderful.
Bob, is this really you?
Who is this?
Is Lieutenant Kendall there?
Oh, my name's Tyndall, T-I-N-D-L-E.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is Bob Kendall there?
No, I'm afraid he isn't.
Well, thank you.
Oh, no, wait. Don't hang up.
I beg your pardon?
Look, I don't know the man you're looking for, but, well, maybe I can help you find him. Is he in the Navy?
Yes.
Shore duty?
No, he's aboard the Fairlane.
Well, that's a destroyer, isn't it?
Yes, the DD-1798.
I think I may have seen it out at Pearl. It could be there now. Look, let me help you. Where are you?
We're in the lobby.
And the house phone's next to the cashier's window?
Yes.
Don't move. I'll be right down.
He knew why he was impelled to rush out of his room and down to the lobby as though his life depended on it. The lonely, almost pleading voice on the telephone sounded like a beginning for his weekend shore leave. And when he found the house phones and the girl standing beside them, he was sure. She was small and graceful, her light summer dress clinging to her gentle figure. Her raven hair was neatly trimmed about a face tanned almost golden in color. Her brown eyes were wide and slanted slightly at the corners. And her nose, thin at the bridge, curved up into full nostrils. To him, she seemed to glow with the freshness of an island breeze. He didn't know who this exotic creature was or what she was, and he didn't care.
Hello. My name's Alan Tyndall.
Oh.
I hope you like what you're staring at as much as I like what I'm staring at.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. I should have left. But I thought I owed you an explanation.
Well, not here, huh? In the bar, we can have a cool drink with pineapple in it or anything in it, and then you can explain it there.
Really, I have to leave now. I shouldn't have bothered you this way. The switchboard operator misunderstood me. It isn't what you might think.
I'm not thinking anything right now except that, well, you're very beautiful, and I'd like to kiss that switchboard operator.
Thank you. Well, Lieutenant...
No, wait, please. One drink, no more, and no passes. You let me help you find Kendall if I can. If I can't, you've only wasted 30 minutes of your life, and... Lady, you've given me a lovely day.
You really mean that, don't you?
Yes, I do, very much.
All right, Lieutenant.
Alan.
Alan?
I don't know your name.
It's Carol. Carol Hanoka.
They found a table in the bar overlooking the beach and the blue Pacific. Outside their window, 1,000 people sprawled on the sand. And native boys glided into shore, their surfboards cutting smoothly across the long, rolling breakers. They glanced at each other, and their eyes held and then moved quickly away.
Aloha. That can mean hello or goodbye.
Well, I'll drink to that if it means hello.
Why are you staring at me?
Why, I'm sorry. Well, you're smiling now, and a while ago you seemed sad. What caused the change, Carol?
Oh, out there, the sun, the sea, those people on the beach. You know, the world's a very happy place if you look at the right things.
Oh, I understand exactly. Especially right now.
You embarrass me.
I don't mean to. It's just that I'd like to know more about you. Unless you think I might be intruding.
Oh, no. I don't know why, but suddenly I want to tell you about myself. Everyone wants to be understood, really. But I especially want you to understand. Does that sound foolish?
No. No, it doesn't. You always lived in the islands?
I was born in Hawaii, not 2 miles from this hotel. A real islander. That's pretty rare these days.
Hanoka. Is that a Hawaiian name?
Oh, my father was pure Hawaiian. He was descended from King Kamehameha. Unfortunately, he married an Irish waitress from Boston, which somewhat diluted the royal line.
Your parents still living, Carol?
My father lives on the other side of Oahu. He hates this side. Thinks the Americans have destroyed his country.
Oh, what do you think?
Well, I'm an American. Let me tell you about my mother. There was a girl. Vivacious, red-headed, terrible-tempered, a wonderful character.
She's not living?
I don't know. She ran off with a sailor when I was 7.
Oh.
Well, you're not going to feel sorry for me, are you? Oh, don't do that, Alan. Pity's a terrible thing. Self-pity's even worse. We'll have another drink, and then I must go.
They had another drink, and he listened as the beautiful girl told him about herself and her father. She was 28 years old. She lived in an apartment in Honolulu. She had a responsible job as a buyer in a department store, and she made good money. A successful young woman by any standards. And he found himself becoming involved in what she said and what she thought.
And I got the job because I knew what sort of native goods the tourists liked. Of course, most of it's made in San Francisco. Don't most of us live by a label?
Oh, I don't know. That depends on the individual, I think.
Not when you carry the label in your face, in the color of your skin.
Hey, you told me self-pity was a terrible thing.
I'm sorry, Alan, you're right.
Carol, I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of, not ever.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Alan, you didn't come downstairs to the lobby to help me find another man, did you?
No, I suppose not.
Why did you come?
Oh, I don't know. A voice, lonely, interesting. Maybe I thought you might have been someone to, well, spend a sailor's weekend with.
Do you still think so?
No. Not that way. How about you? You sorry I lied to you?
No. No, it's been a wonderful afternoon. A happy time. I mean that, Alan. I want you to always know it.
You sound like you're saying goodbye for keeps.
I am.
Oh, no. Now, that's absurd. We're just getting to know each other. And
we like each other, don't we? Please, Alan. Let's leave it that way, please.
Carol, does this have something to do with Bob Kendall?
You see, if we don't let it stand for what it is, a happy afternoon can be ruined.
All right. All right, we'll forget Kendall or whatever his name is. He doesn't matter to me if he doesn't matter to you. Past is past and future is future. Oh, please, Carol, I'm trying.
The trouble with you is you're so convincing.
They stretched a happy afternoon into a happy dinner and a happy evening. Nothing serious. A kind of unspoken pact between them. They danced, they laughed, they talked about the Navy, Hawaii, hopes, defeats. The kind of things two people who like each other talk about. Then they made plans for Saturday. At her insistence, about midnight, he saw her to a cab in front of the hotel and sent her back to Honolulu. It was almost 10 o'clock the next morning when he was awakened by the telephone beside his bed. It was the operator phoning to say she was sending up 2 messages, and they arrived a few minutes later. They were both for Lieutenant Bob Kendall. Then there was a knock at the door.
Yeah?
Hi, my name's Kendall. I understand they sent a couple of messages up here by mistake.
Oh, yeah, they did. Come on in, won't you?
Gee, I hate to bother you this way.
It's okay. I'm Alan Tyndall.
Oh, well, they sound alike.
Yeah.
I checked out yesterday afternoon. I guess they could have gotten balled up.
That happens all the time. I was about to order a breakfast, will you? Care to join me?
Sorry, I got a heavy date waiting down the lobby.
Oh?
Uh-huh. Flight nurse. Met her last night. Did you go to the dance at the officer's club?
No, I didn't.
Great Liberty Town.
Yeah, I know. Oh, your messages, I almost forgot. There you are. I'm sorry I read them before I realized they weren't for me.
Oh, probably aren't important anyway.
One's from a girl named Carol Hanoka. Says she'll be here at 3 o'clock. Of course, that's from yesterday.
Oh, that name? Man.
Oh, really?
And how? Plenty of action. And strictly available. If you want her phone number...
No, No, thanks. Just wondered.
Beautiful doll. Only if you call her.
Yeah.
She'll take you on a merry-go-round you won't forget. Well, thanks a lot. See you around.
Yeah. Yeah, see you around.
What would it have been like if he had never met Bob Kendall? All Saturday morning, the young lieutenant wondered that. But he had met him. And he could no longer think of Carol Hinoka the same way. Still beautiful, yes, still desirable, still many, many things. But no longer the same. Their date was for 3 o'clock, for swimming.
Hello.
Alan, this is Carol.
Oh, hi, Carol.
I'm here in the lobby. I brought my suit. Shall I change up there?
Yeah, sure, that'll be fine.
Alan, are you all right?
Yeah, sure. Come on up, I've been waiting for you.
For a moment, he'd been tempted to hang up the phone, but then he reconsidered. There were only 2 days and one evening left of his shore leave. If this beautiful, exotic creature was out for fun, then maybe he'd been right the first time. Maybe this was a way to spend his weekend.
Hi. What a beautiful day.
Perfect day for a swim. Come on in.
For a minute there on the telephone, you had me worried.
Oh, how's that?
Well, you sounded so solemn. Not like you at all.
Periodic depression. Nothing my neighborhood psychiatrist can't manage.
Oh, silly.
Yeah, I am kind of silly, aren't I?
Yes, and I like you that way.
Okay, it's a deal. You dress in here and I'll take the bathroom, huh?
All right. I hope you like my suit. I just bought it today.
Really? You know, bathing suits were made for girls like you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Say, funny thing, the hotel still thinks I'm Bob Kendall. They sent up a couple of his messages here this morning. He must be a busy guy, phone calls, some beautiful girls, messages. You go with him very long?
Not very long. Gee, this is hard to get into. I don't know why they make them so small.
I'll be glad to come out and help.
No, thank you.
You just say when, huh?
Well, just a minute. There. You can come out now. Do you like it?
I like the way you look in it.
Alan.
Hmm?
Before we go down to the beach, could we talk a minute?
Sure.
You mentioned Bob Kendall. Alan, I don't want anything to ruin us or our friendship.
Not on your life, honey. That guy's the furthest thing from my mind.
Well, still, you did mention him. Maybe it'd be better if we did talk about it, get it out in the open, and then we'd never have to think of him again.
Carol, you remember what I said yesterday? The past is past. Now, if you make me start recounting my old girlfriends, we might never get down to the beach.
Do you really mean that?
Of course I mean it. We're grown people. We've had good times and bad. Now, today is a day for sun and swimming and not worrying about anything. In short, this day is ours.
And it was. They swam, they played tennis. He even tried to ride a surfboard and nearly broke his neck. It was a happy time. For moments, he would forget Bob Kendall and remember the girl he'd known yesterday. Then the thoughts would come back, and he would correct his perspective. That evening, they went dancing.
You know, I've waited 30 hours to hold you in my arms. It's worth every minute of it.
Are you that fond of dancing?
Are we dancing? I didn't realize. Are you having fun?
Oh, yes. And yet, we hardly know each other. We just met yesterday.
Well, that doesn't really matter, does it, Carol? Does it?
Let's sit down.
Just when I'm beginning to like Hawaiian music?
Now I know you need to sit down. Come on.
All right. Excuse me, please.
Excuse me.
Pardon. Here, through here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always this crowded?
At Waikiki? Oh, yes.
Haven't you got a nice little remote island somewhere where a fella can dance with his girl without dodging waiters? What kind of a South Sea Island paradise is this?
Thank you. Well, have you ever been to Hilo?
No.
Oh, it's a sleepy little town. Lots of flowers. Even a live volcano. It's on Hawaii.
Nope. Tourists there, too.
Well, then I have just what you're looking for. Now, Willy Willy. No, don't laugh. It's really a town. On Kauai. It has a lovely little bay, cane fields, rains almost every day, and no tourists.
That part I like.
At least, almost. Or how about Kaualui? Oh, it's a nice town. It's on the ocean, too. Island Steamer makes it every week.
Oh? Maybe we could fly down there.
What?
Well, you know, spend a weekend.
Alan, are you serious?
Of course I'm serious. That sounds ideal.
Somehow that doesn't sound right. Not from you.
Why? Is there something different about me?
I don't know. Yesterday, you seemed different. Maybe I'm just imagining it, Alan. Yesterday, I believed you. Today, I'm not sure.
Well, I'm the same guy, Carol.
But not the same toward me. Alan, yesterday afternoon, I wanted to say goodbye. I said we shouldn't spoil a happy time. I meant it then. I mean it now.
I'm not trying to spoil anything, Carol. Look, I got an idea. Let's get out of this noise and smoke. There's a full moon out there, so let's go for a swim, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, come on. It'll do us both good. Fresh air, a chance to be by ourselves. Come on, please.
All right, Alan.
The moonlight flooded the beach. The surf was calm, glistening with phosphorus. It was quiet now, deserted. Only the two of them in the gently rolling sea.
Wonderful?
It's cold.
Fine naval officer you are, frightened of a little cold water.
Come on. Come on, let's get out of water.
Oh, this is wonderful. I could stay here forever.
Could you?
Uh-huh.
With me?
Alan.
Come here. I've wanted to do that for a long time.
Oh, Alan. Alan, please, no. Alan.
What? You cheap little trap.
Alan, don't.
Roddy, you got to slap my face. Just who do you think you are? What's the matter? Are my kisses as good as Bob Kendall's, or was there someone before him who was even better? Or someone before that?
Alan, stop.
How many there been, Carol, or have you lost count?
Probably a great many less than there has been for you. Didn't you tell me there were so many we wouldn't have time to swim if you told me about them? Then what gives you the right to pass judgment on me? Is there one standard for naval officers and another for women? Is that what you believe?
I believe you set me up for a sucker, and I fell for it. Look, I went for you in a big way, and you made a fool out of me.
Why? Because I wouldn't let you touch me? Is that how I made a fool out of you? Did I hurt your manly pride that much? Listen to me, Alan. I want to tell you something. Yesterday, I thought you were something very, very special. You were lonely just as I was lonely. And you were honest. And we talked about real things, things important to both of us. And there was something I'd never felt before. Love. Do you understand the meaning of that word? Love. It's something people want and need, something people search a lifetime for. I liked you right from the start. And the same things were happening to you, I know, but then you changed. Suddenly it wasn't real. It was cheap and dishonest. You made it cheap, Alan. Why?
I don't know.
Because there'd been others for me as there had been for you. Couldn't you accept me as I am today, not as I was yesterday? Can't people change when they want to change? Alan, weren't you the one who said the past is past, or was that a lie, too?
I don't know, Carol. I don't know what I said.
Perhaps I remember because I believed you. Well, you've shown me something, Alan. You've shown me that I can't escape from myself. Maybe that's what I've been trying to do. Suddenly, you've made me stand still and face myself, almost for the first time. And you know something? I'm not ashamed anymore. I don't have to run.
And then the girl who was half Hawaiian, half Boston Irish, and who was therefore neither one, turned slowly and walked back toward the hotel. She held her head high now. She had indeed changed. Her search for an identity was over. In rejecting the boy, she had rejected a part of herself. And she was proud. What of the young lieutenant? He sat quietly on the beach, looking out to sea. His pride had been hurt. but something more important. Her words had reached him. And for himself and all men, he felt ashamed.
Romance is produced and directed by William Frug. The Golden Face was written by Mr. Frug and starred Stacey Harris and Lillian Baev. Others in the cast were Parley Bear and Byron Kane. This is Dan Cubberly, inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. Guess where Eve Arden, as our Miss Brooks, finds herself on tomorrow night's show. Lover's Lane, that's where. And with Bashful Boynton, the biology teacher, the apple of her eager eye. Can Eve make time in Lover's Lane? Or will this latest effort to help Cupid help her fail like all the others? We know, but won't say. Listen in for CBS Radio's Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, on most of these stations tomorrow night. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
Romance, Untuned to Yesterday from November 12th, 1955 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of Romance, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.